Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host for today, Anthony Wood, and I'll be joined in just a moment by young Ari Gold. Later on, we will also be speaking to John McLean about the schedule release. But first of all, as I mentioned, we are joined by Ari Gold. Ari, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And first of all, how are you enjoying the lockdown?
You know, it's getting to a point now to where, you know, it's cabin fever for sure, but I'm still going to take it slow and not hop back out in the world yet. I'm going to let things kind of see how they go before I get back to normal life.
Absolutely. Sort of see if we can walk before we can run. It's a strange situation, and I've heard from a bunch of different NFL personnel that a lot of GMs and scouts and such have found it an interesting process because they've realized they can have a bit more of a work-life balance. How much of a difference do you think for what you do, for example, is this going to make in the long run? Have you noticed that as well?
Yeah, you know, I'm very fortunate with what I do for a living. I have a lot of flexibility. So I found myself probably putting more time into Texans media and interviews and things to put out. And that's probably a bad thing because that's impacting my day-to-day job, but I enjoy this so much that, you know, it's a tough balance to have. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's an adjustment for everybody. I mean, there's so much going on in the world, and, you know, the NFL is still moving at the rate that it was prior to. It's almost as if they haven't been impacted at all. The draft was a ton of fun. I'm sure GMs and head coaches and personnel guys are all enjoying being home and being able to do what they do on a day-to-day basis, but being surrounded by family. So it's going to be interesting to see how this impacts next season, not 2020, but 2021, and see if there's any changes internally with the NFL.
It really will. And you mentioned, obviously, you've been able to do a bit more work in terms of Texans recently. And I know you've spoken to Lonnie Johnson, Footwork King, Isaiah Coulter, and David Johnson as well. Let's go on to David Johnson, if I may. The interview was fascinating. He comes across as a very, very well-spoken, very sort of calm individual. But he seems very excited about his move. What was he like to interview? What was his overall sort of sentiment on the move?
Yeah, you know, we had a lot of good conversation, you know, before I hit the record button, you know, that I'll just keep between us. But as far as him and his approach and what he's looking to do when he gets here, I mean, he's very excited. You know, I've talked to other people around him and in his camp. And also some people with the Cardinals. He's really excited to get started. You know, this is something that it's new for him. You know, he's only been with the Cardinals since he was drafted. And he really wants to get going. He's a fun interview. He's a great guy to talk to. And I think the interview, you could see exactly who David Johnson is as a person. And I thought that was a big part of what I wanted to accomplish when talking to him, because you know, you have Texans media that, you know, internally at the, you know, at NRG, and they're going to ask the same questions that, you know, they normally ask when a guy is traded. But I think with everything that was involved with the trade, I think it was a good idea to give Texans fans an idea of who he was as a person, because at the end of the day, you know, they are people. And I think you start to, once you get to know them and who they are as a person, that's when you really start to connect with them as a player. And so you got to get that out of the way. So he's excited and he's doing a ton of things. And, you know, he's interacting with the fans now. He's doing jersey giveaways and things of that nature. You know, I'm excited to see what he does.
Absolutely. And I've only heard good things about him as well. We had the chance to speak to Darren Fells not too long ago, and he was really complimentary about it, really excited about the fact that David's coming into the building, obviously from their time together with the Cardinals. So I know a lot of players in the building are going to be excited about this. And you got a feel for the guy in a way, because obviously him being part of this Hopkins trade, everyone's focusing on how bad a trade they felt it was from DeAndre Hopkins' point of view, and how angry they are at the Texans for letting Hopkins go. But at the end of the day, David Johnson is a good player. He's a proven player. And you've got to feel for the guy a little bit, because he's getting some unnecessary sort of backlash as a result. But I think he's handling it really well. And that's something that really came out in the interview, is how he sort of brushes that aside. He acknowledges that Hopkins was obviously part of all of this, but he seems just more excited about the move than anything else.
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me, was just his, first of all, his openness to, what Bill O'Brien gave up to get him, right? I think acknowledging that, he understands the value of DeAndre Hopkins and what he meant to the city and what he meant to the team. And him acknowledging, that aspect of the trade, I thought, was awesome to hear from him personally. He's been a very productive player. People like to tag him as injury prone, but really he only missed one season. And it was after, maybe one of the best seasons a running back has ever had in 2016. But then when you take into account what he did in 2018, when he came back, brand new coach, a defensive minded head coach, play calling was awful from a scheme perspective, new offensive linemen, but yet he still went out and produced 1400 all purpose yards and 10 TDs. That's got to speak a lot to who he is and what he's able to do on the field. It was a different run scheme. They switched from a zone to a power. So there's a lot of different aspects of what he's accomplished in this league that should give Texans fans a lot of reason to be excited. But you're right. Like, he's going to forever be associated with the DeAndre Hopkins trade. That's always going to be a part of it. And he has done a really good job of just kind of brushing that out and letting kind of canceling out the noise and, talking about what he's going to bring to the team. We got into the different nuances of the scheme from when he was with Bruce Arians to when he was with Steve Wilkes. Didn't talk too much about the Cliff Kingsbury year because he really wasn't utilized. But, he talked about how that scheme is going to be very similar to the scheme that he'll be a part of here in Houston and how that's exciting for him.
Absolutely. And moving on from that point, one of the quotes I found interesting, he said that defenses are going to have a tough time knowing what's going to happen. Obviously, with the fact that he's got Duke Johnson alongside of him, both of them are very dual threat. They're both very unpredictable in terms of where they'll most likely be lined up. And he mentioned that there are a lot of similarities between Houston's scheme from what he's been able to see in film and BA's. Can you tell us more about what he said about the system itself that he likes and he feels he can bring to it that will suit him well?
Yeah, so he said that he feels better thriving in his own scheme. He likes to be able to pick his hole. He can play power because he's a bigger back. And he said that in 2018, obviously, he had the stats to show it. A lot of people compare, everything to 2016. So when you do that, you're doing yourself a disservice because we don't see running backs have the years that David Johnson did in 2016. But he really likes the way that his own scheme is set up. He thinks that's the ideal scheme for him to be a fit in. And he sees that, what we're doing, even though we've really had a mesh of power and zone in the time with Bill O'Brien, you have to question, is that just based on personnel? And that's why, with Carlos, we ran a lot of power. But then last year, there would be times where when Duke was in, we would run zone schemes. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the Texans do. I'm expecting the Texans to really take advantage of David Johnson's skill set and really doing right by him by putting him in a system he's going to flourish in. And then when you talk about Duke Johnson and David, Johnson and Johnson, it's going to be extremely fun. When I asked him about that and him lining up with Duke, the reason why I asked that is because when you look at what the vision of this offense potentially will be, if you're going to play cover two or cover three to try to take away Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller, if healthy, right? Obviously, everything plays a part in health. But if you're going to try to take away the deep ball, I just don't see how you're going to be able to stop what we have underneath and the short stuff, stuff in the flats, Cobb coming across the middle. One of the missing dynamics as far as this offense that people tend to not really want to, or not, they tend to not look at really is Jordan Akins, who really developed well last year. So with Duke and David in the backfield together, you're going to have to account for both of them. And this offense has a ton of versatility in what they can do. I know that's a word that people hate right now because that's the word used by Bill O'Brien at all times. But it really gives you the opportunity to be extremely creative on offense. And I think it's going to be really fun. Will it work? Nobody can tell you if it will or won't. But I really think that this team is set up in a very good fashion. And if we were to take away the DeAndre Hopkins trade and just looked at the team, I think fans would feel really good, but fans are emotional and they're tied to players. So it's hard for them to see through the hazy skies.
Absolutely. And then obviously, and building off of your point, you mentioned Akins there. He had a fantastic year last year, exactly as you said. Unfortunately, Jordan Thomas didn't quite develop as we'd hoped, so hopefully he can build on that this year. But I mean, Darren Fells as well, throw in there. I mean, Kahale Waring is another guy that we obviously have forgotten about. I know Mark Vandermeer said a lot of the people inside the building are really excited about him this year. And that's another guy that we don't really know what to expect from, but he's extremely athletic. He's a good blocker. He could be another threat in the sort of shorter routes there. It's going to be really interesting to see how defenses can cover all of this, especially when you throw in Isaiah Coulter, DeAndre Carter, Kenny Stills, and so on. It's a very mixed offense, so that's going to be very exciting. But one of the things that I found particularly interesting from when you were speaking to David Johnson was that you discussed how coming to the Texans made him feel wanted and how Bill O'Brien gave him that feel of being wanted. I know you hinted on that earlier. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, I think it's a very important dynamic to really understand, in my opinion. I think with just as people, right? You know, I don't know if you're a father, but you're a son, right? You have a job. You know, the feeling of being wanted truly can impact a lot of the production of what you do, and to have that feeling from the person who makes the decision. And while we may look at the value of the trade and disagree, I'll be the first one to say that. David Johnson acknowledges what was given up and how what that means to him. And that has to go a long way. He was very open about it when we talked about it. And I wrote an article about it on TexansUnfiltered.com. We talked about it on the Texans Unfiltered podcast that, you know, there's a certain aspect of being wanted that you really can't control. And when you're not wanted, it puts you in a bad position and you start to doubt yourself and everything else starts to creep into your mind. And I love that he was so open about it and really, you know, started to talk more and more about that feeling. And you could see when he talked about it how happy he was and what he feels the culture is going to be. So I think that's a really telling sign for people when it comes to David Johnson on what they should potentially expect.
Absolutely. And something that you two also touched on, which I found really interesting. Obviously, this is going to be a very different season from what we're used to. We don't really know what to expect. He said himself he didn't know what to expect in terms of just building up to the season, let alone the week one itself. He mentioned that the potential of playing behind closed doors might bring in that practice mentality to games, which is a bit of a concern. Can you tell us a bit more about what he said in terms of this and how it's going to affect them come game time, should they end up playing behind closed doors?
Yeah, he talked. We talked a lot about that, or we talked more about it than I anticipated. You know, he as a player, you really want the fans there, on both sides, whether it's a home or away game, because they just the way it can impact a game. And he mentions that he doesn't see how, you know, he doesn't see the season being played without it because the fans are such a big part of the game. He says that if he does, he does. We joked about, you know, when he played, you know, in Arizona, he played Seattle twice a year, how he probably would prefer to have that stadium empty as it's one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL. So, and we joked and talked about that. He said he definitely prefer to play in Seattle without fans. But you know, it's crazy right now with everything that's going on. And, you have to wonder if that's something that's on the table because safety comes first. And when you're putting 60,000 people in one stadium together, and then you're adding everybody else on the field and coaches and trainers and, you know, all the doctors and water boys and, you know, equipment managers, there's just with where we're at currently, it's got to be a concern. So if we continue to see that the curve's being flattened, you know, maybe that's not something that happens, but he said either way, he's ready to go. So if that's what they got to do, they're gonna have to pump in some music or sound, and he's gonna be there, and he's gonna be ready to go.
I remember last season when they were preparing for a few games, Coach O'Brien would have them training inside NRG with music and cheering being pumped in. So I guess that's where perhaps that comes in handy going ahead, is that maybe they're a little bit more used to it than some other teams, I suppose. Another guy that you've spoken to these last couple of weeks, Isaiah Coulter, wide receiver, obviously Texans drafted this year. Really exciting player out of Rhode Island. Really looking forward to seeing what he can bring. What are your thoughts on your discussion with him, and what impressed you most about him?
Yeah, so I actually wasn't the one that spoke with Isaiah. I set that up for one of our writers. You can follow him on Twitter at Texans underscore thoughts. Really smart guy. Extremely excited to have him on the team on the Texans Unfiltered
Yeah,
team.
he's fantastic.
He is. He's a great follow. Great film guy. We're doing lots of different things as far as what we're bringing to Texans fans. We want to get add a little bit more depth to the articles and things of that nature, but he did a film breakdown with them and they went over 10 plays. And just listening to what Jordan and him talked about, you know, the guy's very smart. That was really the biggest takeaway. And his work ethic is definitely there. You know, his football IQ is up there. He really has an understanding of the position. He already knows what he needs to work on and how, you know, how he's going to be able to get on the field in year one. You know, he has great hands. His separation is amazing. He's got little techniques and things that he does off the line. He's able to read defenses and diagnose them really well. He's a very, very smart player. We're very fortunate in the sense of this draft being so wide receiver heavy that we were able to grab him in the fifth. You know, I saw a lot of people had him in, you know, third round, fourth round. So he's going to be a good player. And then when you look at the team as a whole, you know, who knows what happens with Brandon Cooks and his contract. Maybe we restructured or maybe we let him go. No, you know, there's no dead money associated with it. Will Fuller's a free agent. Kenny Stills is a free agent. So really the only wide receivers we know that will be here next year are Isaiah Coulter and Randall Cobb. So it's going to be interesting to see how he develops, but Jordan had nothing but great things to say about him. He said that he walked away from that interview thinking that we have a player to build on for a very long time, and that he's going to be solid.
Absolutely, and I had the chance to speak to Coach Fleming over at Rhode Island recently about Coulter, and he was so complimentary about him and about his work ethic and his study work in the film room. I can't wait to see him coming in. What excites me most about him, I think, really is the idea is he's quick, but he doesn't necessarily rely on that speed entirely. He's got really good height, really good hands, as you mentioned. I think having him being coached and guided by someone like Andre Johnson is really exciting. That for me is something. He brings a different element to this offense in that none of the guys they've got currently are particularly tall. So he brings that level of height as well as ability to stretch the field moving forward. So that's really exciting moving ahead. If you're looking at this offense as a whole, we touched on it earlier. It's going to be difficult to make cuts come September. Obviously, you're looking at perhaps Kiki QT, DeAndre Carter. Maybe Coulter, depending on if he did not perhaps progress as they'd expected. Where do you think we need to be looking at players who are on the fringe and at risk here?
Oh man, you know, it's whew, there's a lot of different moving pieces right now. Kiki QT has to feel like the seat is getting a little hot for him. I think David Johnson, whoa, DeAndre Carter's probably in a position where he's going to have to, you know, he's got some things to worry about. But I think, you know, when you look at this team, you know, with Tyler Simmons potentially taking over DeAndre Carter's spot, I love that they brought him in. I think that's a move that people aren't even thinking about right now. But Tyler Simmons, an undrafted guy, fast, return specialist. I think he's going to be competing with DeAndre. You know, we'd love to see Kiki turn it around because, you know, he was a third round pick his rookie year. You know, anytime he played the Colts, and I think it was 11 receptions each time. You have to wonder how much Wes Welker leaving for San Francisco impacted his development.
Yeah.
You know, because he was, you know, Wes Welker went to Texas Tech as well. You know, I've been told that Wes Welker was really his champion on the coaching staff and was the one that kind of had his back and supported him. We saw a decline once Wes left. So I think those are the two wide receivers you have to watch. I think Jordan Thomas is likely out if we don't carry four tight ends, which, you know, I don't see that being possible unless we start to unless we use Akins as an emergency wide receiver, which is what he did in college as well. So offensively, you're probably looking at either a Greg Manth or Senio Kelemente probably getting the axe. So that's what four people on the offensive side. On the defensive side, I really hope that Jonathan Grenard can beat out either Jonathan Grenard, Jacob Martin, or Duke Etchefor can beat out Brendan Scarlett for that opposite side of Whitney Mercilus. Not that Brendan Scarlett's a bad player, and I don't see him being cut, but he's not a great pass rusher. He's okay at setting the edge and fine against the run, but outside of that, he's kind of a liability. I'd love to see what Gernard Martin or Ejiofor can do with those snaps. So there's going to be somebody from that outside linebacking core that's going to get cut. We know it's not Whitney. I would assume it's not Jacob Martin. And we know it's not Gernard. So it's going to be either Ejiofor or Scarlett. But then, you know, you look at what Bill O'Brien likes and what he values. Brendan Scarlett's great on special teams. So that's going to be interesting to watch. I think from the corner perspective, I think this year you'll see Garion Conley as the cornerback one. I think if anybody starts to really watch his film, I think they'll start to realize what he's really capable of. And, you know, in Oakland, they played in a heavy zone scheme. Today I spoke with Antonio Cromartie about the position in the Texans secondary, and we'll have that out later this week. But he was very high on Garion Conley, and I've been very high on him since the time that we traded him. Coming out of Ohio State, you know, he played man his entire time there, struggled in zone his second year with the Raiders, came in midseason last year. We wouldn't have beat the Bills without him. He had two huge TD PBUs. I think this next season is going to be amazing to watch for him. Bradley Roby, I think, is a stud as well. Lonnie Johnson's been doing a ton of work in the offseason. We're hoping that he can put that together. It's a lot of it has to do with his footwork and his hips, but you can't teach what he has and his length and his arms and his aggressive nature. You know, Vernon Hargraves, it's funny. Because it's the slot position, it's going to be interesting to watch. You know, slot corners have a lot of different responsibilities outside of what outside corners have. So, you know, you're more responsible for the run. You really have to diagnose what the offense is going to do to be able to know what your role and responsibility is on that play. So learning different terminology midseason coming from Tampa Bay, you have to wonder if maybe if he catches up, maybe we see a little bit something different. And then Jonathan Reed, or John Reed, out of Penn State, fun little corner, 5'10", quick, elusive, has very loose hips, very physical, can play press man, can play outside and corner, a solid cornerback. It's going to be fun to watch him develop too. So I think the cornerback room is pretty much set. You know, if I had to say an odd man out, probably Keon Crossan it would likely be that person, in my opinion. And then the safeties. I think that – you'd probably agree, but I mean, safety has to be the biggest question mark now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where do you see them going with that?
I mean, personally, I'd love to see them bring in Eric Reed, but that's just, I mean, who wouldn't want to see that at the end of the day? I think at this point in time, from everyone I've spoken to, the overriding sentiment is that Eric Murray it's his job to lose at this point in time. Do I think he's a starting caliber? Probably not, no. I think he's a solid backup and not necessarily a starter, personally. I like the Michael Thomas addition, but that's more of a special teams addition than anything else. And AJ Moore, again, he's a good backup. He's a good special teamer, but he's not a starter. There is definitely a hole there that they've got to be looking at. I think they overpaid slightly for Eric Murray myself. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, based on what we know of Eric Murray, I would agree with you. They definitely overpaid. I think it was, 3 years, $20.5 million?
Yes.
So, yeah, on the outside looking in, it definitely looks like they overpaid for him. Now, it's interesting if they're going to play him in maybe in Justin Reed's position and let Justin Reed play that single high safety center fielder, playing back in coverage, roaming sideline to sideline. You know, Justin Reed mentioned in an interview the other day that when they asked him specifically about bringing Eric Reed in, how Eric would come in and play in the box and Justin would be more of the cover guy. I think we're going to see a lot of different things. I think we'll see Lonnie probably play in dime sets and line up against the top tier tight ends. I know he struggled in the divisional round against Travis Kelce, but one of the things he told me when we talked was that he did have an injury and he was struggling to be able to get past it when he was playing. And if you look at the regular season game last year, he played Kelce extremely well, was very aggressive from the snap of the ball and off the line of scrimmage. So I wonder if they're going to start to mix in some looks there with Lonnie. But yeah, you know, Eric Reed, I feel better now after hearing what Justin said about bringing Eric Reed in, because what I look at them too, and I see them both as very similar players, great tacklers, play in the box, maybe could do some zone stuff, but we haven't really seen Justin Reed as that single high free safety that can just kind of roam. But he has the skill set to do it. So that's going to be very interesting to watch. So I'm not opposed to it. I just wonder, when are we going to see that ball drop, or have we already seen the ball drop and we're just all, speculating at this point?
And it's a tough one to predict because, like you mentioned, I know a lot of people are down on the idea of bringing in Eric Reid simply because, as you mentioned, they are quite similar players. I would like to see Justin Reid given a little bit more fluidity, a little bit more space in that. I think it'd be great to see him as a single high. But at the end of the day, none of us can see into O'Brien's mind. I think that's safe to say at this point in time. We have absolutely no idea where he's going to go with this. So it's going to be interesting. Lonnie Johnson, I know Mark Vandermeer. He mentioned him possibly moving over to safety at some point as well, so that might be interesting to watch. And Jalen Watkins as well is another guy they brought in. I guess we should keep an eye out on him as well. I was slightly surprised that they didn't bring back Jahlil Adai personally, because I thought he had a strong year last year. Good backup, but again, we can't see into O'Brien's mind there. The one position is on offense that I've got a slight question mark about is that third running back spot. Are they going to use Cullen Gillespie are possibly a little bit more heavier there this year? Are they going to bring back Kron Higdon, Buddy Howell, or have they not got the guy yet? That's what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Carlos Hyde kind of played his, kind of showed his hand a little too soon by declining that 2-year, $10 million deal that was offered on the table. So there's been nobody linked to him since then. So maybe he comes back and he's back on another veteran deal. I really like Buddy Howell. I think that a lot of fans loved what he did in preseason last year.
Yes.
He showed a lot of spark. He's a special teams guy, which we know Bill O'Brien appreciates and really looks for in his players. He wants guys to be able to do a lot of different things.
It's that versatility again, isn't
It's that
it?
versatility again. Oh, wait, what's the new word this year? Layers, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what he's been. That's layers. So we've transitioned from versatility to layers.
And being able to
So
spell
Buddy
team as
Howell,
well.
and then the TEAM. Right, so we're hitting all of Bill O'Brien would be super proud of us right now. But no, when you look at Buddy Howell, this will be his third year with the team. Maybe this is where we start to see him get some snaps. There's a reason they've kept him around, and a lot of it does have to do with special teams, as he is really good on special teams. I really do like the investment we've made in special teams over the last 2 years. You've really seen an improvement
Oh, definitely.
in the regular season and in the playoffs. I mean, God, you look at the Kansas City game in the playoffs. Obviously, we don't want to talk too much about it, except for the fact that we're going to be talking about it for a long time now that we're playing them as the opener week one. But, I think Buddy Howell probably fits that mold. He's okay in pass protection, but the special teams aspect is going to be big. So if I had to guess, I would say Buddy Howell will play that third running back position unless somehow Carlos Hyde comes back saying, please use me again.
Absolutely. And I mentioned it was John McClain not too long ago. I asked him, do you think there's any chance the Texans bring back Carlos Hyde? Because I liked what I saw from him last year. I mean, no one expected him to have the year that he had. But he said that after because he rejected, obviously, as you mentioned, the 2-year contract, he also rejected them during the season, apparently. He said that he cannot see him coming back. He said he can't see that happening at all, which I think is a real shame. But I can understand that. We know O'Brien. If he doesn't get his way, then you're in the dog pound, so to speak. So it's a shame, but I think the answer is elsewhere. But one of the guys that I think one position that I'm slightly curious to see what happens is long snapper. I know that's a strange one to bring up, but they've brought John Weeks back, obviously, on a 1-year deal, but they've also brought in a free agent in Anthony Kukwu. I'm curious to see if Weeks is tenure might be over, because I mean he's the longest tenured Texan on the roster by some margin. I mean, do you think there's any chance he might not actually be on the roster come week one?
I don't think that there's a chance that he's not on the roster. I would assume that a lot of this just has to do with just very similar to kind of what we saw with Shane Leckler. We would bring in punters and during training camp and OTAs, the first 3 years that Shane was here. I would assume this is very similar to that. Just, apply a little pressure to John. But I don't see a situation where John Weeks isn't on this team. But it's a very important position. And here's why I don't see it happening. Last year, everybody was complaining about Fairbairn and him missing his extra points and his field goals, but really it was a whole new operation. And I talked to John, last season, right, like it was during this. And, the whole operation starts with John Anger and Kaimi, and they really got, they nailed it down, you know, halfway through the season, and they really started to perform and looked like the operation was cleaned up. You know, in the first seven games, you would see laces kind of in all sorts of different directions by the hold. Brian Anger is known for being a bad holder prior to joining the Texans. So I think adding another element to that when you have the operation kind of tightened up and where you want it, the blueprints ready, I don't see why they would go ahead and change that up, as now you're talking about three straight years, right? We went from Leckler to Daniels, yep. Daniels to Anger. Kaimi's been here, but there's always been a change, and I wouldn't expect there to be another one. I think this is just more of a competition thing.
Absolutely. And then finally, just to sort of round things off, obviously we've mentioned that you've spoken to, or you've been in communication with Coulter, Johnson, and Johnson. What is your overwhelming sentiment among the Texans players and staff this offseason regarding the 2020 season and how they're shaping up?
They're all just getting ready. You know, everybody that I've talked to, they're all putting in the work. You can see Lonnie's doing it daily, which is what you want to see from a second year guy. You know, Coulter's putting in work. He was just coming off of one of the virtual OTAs when Jordan talked to him. You know, David is working out constantly and he's in the meetings as well. I feel like everybody on the team is really, you know, putting in the work right now, and it's going to be interesting. You know, we all want to pile on Bill O'Brien, and I totally get it. The guys put us, I get it. But, you know, he's doing things like, you know, he was the first one to hire a sanitized, I forgot the position, but he was the first GM/head coach to hire somebody specifically for sanitization in the locker room and the facilities.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's doing what he can to try to get things ready. You know, yesterday there were memos sent out that it looks like phase one is going to start May 15th, and then phase two with bringing in the players will start a week after that. So it looks like things are starting to get back to normal a little bit. I think right now the biggest problem and challenge that the players are facing is just the fact that they're all kind of spread out right now. You know, it's off season, they go traveling, they go do everything that they want to do. And so they're kind of locked down and they can't really go travel the way that they'd like to. So they're all communicating. You know, David told me that he's talked to Deshaun and he's talked to Nick Martin and he's talked to Tunsil. So, I mean, they're communicating. It's just about getting them on the field and seeing what they can do. And hopefully by the end of May, we start to see training camp and we start to see get back into the swing of things. And this team can get ready to go for week one against Kansas City.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you very much. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @IamYoungLarryGold. Same with Instagram. You can find the Texans Unfiltered podcast on at TexansUnfiltered.com. You can find us on all your favorite podcast platforms. And then we stream on YouTube every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. And then we're actually going to be doing one tonight at 7 p.m. to go over the schedule. So just search Texans Unfiltered and you'll be able to find us. And Anthony, I really appreciate you having me on. I know that I love that we can collaborate while we still do things together. And even though we cover the team, it's nice to be able to see a collaboration. So I really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you very much there to Ari Gold once again. And now on to our second guest. We've just had the schedule release out, so please welcome John McClain.
I'm doing great, Anthony. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. We've just had the schedule release, so let's dive straight into it. I know everyone's very excited to finally get this out. So Texans, relatively middle ground schedule as far as it, for me at least, compared to last year. Starting off week one at the Chiefs, then we got the Ravens, Steelers, Vikings, Jags. Then at the Titans and home to the Packers, then bye week. Then we've got Jags, Browns, Patriots, Lions on Thanksgiving, Colts, Bears, Colts, Bengals, and Titans. First of all, what are your initial thoughts on this schedule?
First four games, opponents are 42-20. That's a tough way to start, especially with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson right off the bat. Both those guys, they combined for 7 touchdowns in regular season against them last year, and then Mahomes threw for 5 more. But the thing that shocks me, Anthony, more than anything that I saw this schedule, Texans have 1 primetime game, and they have none after the opener at Kansas City, and that's with Deshaun Watson. And I'm just stunned about that because They're 6-1 in their last 7 primetime games. And last season, they were 2-1. And all 3 of those games were close. Remember the opener against New Orleans? They lost by 2 on a Will Lutz field goal with no time left. They beat the Colts by 3 and the Patriots by 6. In those 3 games, Deshaun Watson, 8 touchdown passes, 1 touchdown rushing, 1 touchdown receiving. And it's just amazing to me that they have that one game. Later in the year when they play at Indy on December 19th or 20th, if the game is on Saturday the 19th, it could be primetime. But right now they have only one. And there's a lot of teams that I don't think will be as good as the Texans who have more. But that's the way the networks feel about them. And I guess they think without DeAndre Hopkins, they're going to be boring and nobody's going to care about him. But I disagree. As long as Watson's there and his capability for making great plays, I think they'll be worth watching.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because that was something that I was extremely frustrated by at first glance, and I know a lot of other people were as well. Like you mentioned, only one primetime game at the moment, no Monday night football games, no Sunday night football games either. Is this, what do you think has contributed to this? Do you think it's primarily the departure of Hopkins, or is it that networks simply aren't paying enough attention to what the Texans are capable of and have done over the past, as you mentioned, 7 primetime games?
Well, they know what they're capable of. They saw those games last year. They had, I think, the networks are buying into the fact that a lot of people think Texans may be a 500 team, and they may take a step back. Indianapolis and Tennessee, well, not really the Titans. Indianapolis made big moves to get better. If the Titans end up with Devion Clowney, then they will have made big steps to get better. And the Texans, once you got rid of Hopkins, then you wouldn't have Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb. Those moves just don't look as good. But I still think, even though all their receivers have been injury prone, that if you could keep 3 of the 4 healthy at the same time, they can have a prolific offense. But I think they don't think much of David Johnson. I personally think David Johnson will pick right up where Carlos Hyde left off, rush for 1,000 yards, and catch 40 or 50 passes, because he's been a great receiver. So they got a lot of options with Watson on offense, young tight ends, offensive line is better. Now, their defense was bad last year. It was terrible in the playoffs when Mahomes threw for 5 touchdown passes. So maybe the networks say, well, this team's going to give up 30 points a game. But the fact is, last year, playing a first-place schedule, they won at Arrowhead Stadium. They beat the Patriots. They had a great game in London, their best of the season, which is not any big deal to beat the Jaguars, but the fact the Jags go to London every year and the Texans have never been, and the Texans just obliterated them, I thought was a testimonial to O'Brien, the players, the assistant coaches, everybody. But and they won the division 4 the last 5 years, beat Buffalo in the playoffs. Watson had that great play on the winning drive in which he got smashed by 2 pass rushers and got away. The Oakland play where he's kicked in the face and threw the touchdown pass to Fells, touchdown catch against New England, touchdowns beating the into the corner of the end zone and diving and turning flips. I'm just amazed that the networks don't look more at Watson. And even the Kansas City playoff game, they're up 24-0 and they choked it and they lost by 20. But the fact is, it was still exciting and kind of game fans would want to see. But the advantage of that, Anthony, is those of us who have deadlines, we love noon games. And so the one in Detroit, that's the second time in a row they will play at Detroit on Thanksgiving, beat the Lions last time in overtime in 2012. And then, maybe it's a primetime game at Indy. Could be just in the afternoon. We don't know. But when you're on deadline, it's a great schedule.
I completely agree with you there. I must admit, I hadn't even considered that. That's a fantastic point. But what frustrated me a little bit about it was when I saw the full schedule, and I've got to ask, is it in America, is it schedule or schedule? I've got to ask.
It's what you're from England. It's whatever you want to call it, schedule. I think that's fine. I kind of like schedule.
I get a lot of stick from people for saying it like that, but I appreciate that. So the Raiders, obviously first year in Vegas, they've got four home primetime games. It's the first time in their franchise history. It's a little frustrating to see that happening for a team that really wasn't overly consistent last year and doesn't look like they're going to be particularly consistent this year, yet they're getting so much more attention. Do you think it's anything to do with the market that they're working in as well, Vegas, and compared to Houston?
Well, first of all, there's no guarantee their stadium's going to be ready. There's no guarantee that the Rams stadium's going to be ready. Now, I'll say this. I do not think the season will start on time. Like, the NFL rolled out its schedule as if there were no coronavirus pandemic with restrictions. The league ordered everybody to put a happy face on it. The league has plans to start in October, to finish the Super Bowl February 28th. If they needed to move into March, they could. They have plans. They have to play 14 games, 12 games. It certainly would behoove the Texans if they don't have to play their first two games, wouldn't it? If they had played 14 and they got to pass up Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, even the third game against Ben Roethlisberger. So you can't dodge this because it's an unprecedented situation we're living with and going through. And I think it's a pipe dream to think fans can all of a sudden come out. I think the league wants to put a happy spin on it, positive spin on it, but knowing that everybody knows they have to be flexible. They put out the preseason schedule with four games. It'll be a miracle if they're able to play four preseason games. So what came out tonight, Anthony, I do not believe that's the way it's going to look when it comes right down to it. I think that they want to play with full stands because they want to make money. Can you imagine if they play a few games without fans, how that would affect the salary cap next year?
Absolutely.
Players hoping to get extensions in 2021. Like, say Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson's agent said, hey, guys, wait till next year. And Dak Prescott, wait till next year. That's crazy because next year the salary cap could go down because it's based on designated gross revenues. And if it does, say it went down 20%, they wouldn't do it all the first year and drop the cap by 20%. They'd spread it out over 4 years and say do 5%. But still, if it doesn't go up $10 million like it does every year, and you're trying to get $100 million guaranteed in an extension, you should have done it the year before. That's why if I'm the players, I'm telling those agents, look, if I'm Dak Prescott and they're offering 34 and I want 37, I'm saying take that 34. Take it while we can get it because it could all backfire.
Absolutely. And perhaps it could help end the speculation about when Deshaun, for example, will be signing his contract sooner rather than later, which I guess is a minor positive, at least from the fans' point of view from that. But
well, he's not going to do it. They're not even going to get serious about negotiations till Prescott signs, because they're not going to do a deal. Say they did a deal for 37 and Prescott got 38. No, Prescott's got to sign first, Watson next, Mahomes last. That's the order until the next quarterback comes along that's due for a big contract. But if they wait too long, they're going to bite the hand that feeds them, and they may regret it. Another thing that stands out to me about the schedule, besides the unders, we all knew Tampa Bay would have the prime time of maximum numbers, and we knew the Cowboys always do. And the thing about Vegas not knowing if the stadium would be finished, that was one of the biggest surprises. But there's a lot of teams out there with a lot of primetime games, and the Texans are not one of them. And I'd love to see some explanation from somebody that put together the schedule. And I don't know what it would be, but I'll guarantee you at some point this year, Bill O'Brien will use that as extra incentive. Not sure when it'll be, but he will. And the veteran players will point that out too. You know, what if J.J. Watt plays full 16 games and has another great year? Boy, with him and Watson and some of the other talent they got, I think somebody in the networks could have egg on their face. Now, if they go 8-8 or 7-9, they'll look like geniuses.
Absolutely. And you touched on it earlier that we don't know not only when the season's going to start, but how long it's going to be. And at this point, if there's even going to be fans in the stadiums. I know that I talked to Ari Gold earlier today, who spoke to David Johnson about this, and on the Texans Unfiltered podcast, he mentioned that he was concerned about the fact that a lot of players could possibly come to it with a practice mentality of sorts. Do you think that's something that teams should be concerned about if they do end up playing in empty stadiums?
No, they could always pipe in crowd noise like they do at practice and music and everything. I don't think they're going to play with empty stands. I think, do you start the season on time with an empty stadium or do you move it back? They've already shown it can be moved back to October. The Super Bowl can be played on the last Sunday of February in Tampa. You can still have a bye week. Why not do it? The ones that I would worry about are the fans. Like if you get your schedule today, say fans, they want to go see them play the Steelers. And so they're going to rush out and buy plane tickets and get hotel rooms and for a game that's September 27th at Heinz Field and run the risk of it being canceled or moved back. Then they got to try to get refunds from the hotel and the airlines. I tell fans here or on all my talk shows, if you're thinking about following your team, do it late in the year. Don't do it early because you could be in a financial hardship. And right now it's tough enough for people to get money. Considering how many people have lost their jobs and they're including a lot of ticket holders. And I tell you something else. The NFL is under the belief for some reason, maybe they got it from our politicians and I can't imagine they would believe them, but that there's going to be enough testing for everybody to go ahead and play the season. And Roger Goodell seems to have done a reversal here, Anthony. For the longest time, he said, if one state has restrictions, all the restrictions will hold for every team. It'll be a level playing field. Now they seem to act like, okay, if California can't report, and if the Rams and the Chargers and the 49ers can't practice at their facility, but the others can, they're going to let them. I think there's a chance they could bring California teams to other states, put one of them in San Antonio. San Antonio would love to have a team come in there, even if it was for 3 months. And so this was brought up today by the governor of California. What if they get the teams together and a couple of players test positive, or a coach or some ball boy? Do you quarantine your team for 2 weeks and constantly test them? Don't let them work together because not everybody's going to be contagious. It's just unprecedented times. It's the new normal. And that's why the NFL, like talking about they're going to gradually let people come back to work in May, seems asinine.
Absolutely. And it's a very good point. I know other leagues are looking at doing similar things. The Premier League, for example, back in the UK, they're thinking of possibly playing at neutral grounds with empty stadiums as well and moving teams around. It's like you said, it's unprecedented. It's something that...
Well, there's one problem with that. Excuse me, Anthony.
No, absolutely.
And it doesn't matter whether it's in Europe or the United States. Sports are not essential to our society. As much as we love them, they're not. So it would be grossly unfair if teams could get tests whenever they wanted and the public could not.
Yes.
How unfair, what a black eye when it comes to public relations would that be? And right now the United States is sorely lagging behind the other countries about getting tests when you need it. And I'm talking about you get the test and you know quickly whether you're positive or not. And until everybody has an opportunity to get a test whenever they need it, it would not be fair to sequester teams for empty arenas or stadiums where they could get tested every day and the public cannot.
Absolutely. And with that in mind, I mean, obviously, it looks as if it will most likely be pushed back. I'd be surprised at this point if it wasn't. And that's why I didn't really understand, to be perfectly honest, why they published the four potential preseason games in the first place, because it seems, as you mentioned, it seems asinine at this point in time. It seems completely irrelevant.
They wanted to put a happy face on it. They want to look, they want to make everybody have some positive thoughts. Doesn't make me have positive thoughts. I'm hoping it's true, and I'm hoping they can do everything on time. But I understand you got to be flexible. They understand you got to be flexible. You know, Roger Goodell told them put a lid on talking about that. But they know it. It's like Kim Pegula, she and her husband owned the Bills, and she did an interview before that memorandum came down on Wednesday about keeping quiet about any of the talk about, you know, missing games or moving the season back. And she'd already talked about it. And everybody knows it. Every owner knows that's a good possibility. And they're supposed to do whatever they can to make sure everybody's safe. And what are the odds people aren't going to test positive no matter what you do? Kareem Jackson of the Broncos, who played 9 years for the Texans, Kareem said he doesn't want to play unless there's a vaccine. He doesn't want to come home at night and potentially expose his family, his children. And so every player is going to feel like that. The fans, and this is one thing we've learned, Anthony, with all these nincompoops going to the beach, they don't care about practicing social distancing. Look at that. Galveston looked like the 4th of July last weekend. So if they open doors to the stadiums, the fans are not going to practice social distancing, especially when they get a little booze in them. So it's not at letting in 1,000 or 70,000. If you're going to open the door to one, you got to open the doors to all, or don't open the doors at all for anybody, including the players.
Most definitely. And it's such a difficult topic to discuss for the most part, simply because it's filled with so many unknowns and such that it's very difficult at this point to be focusing on, well, how does the schedule look from the Texans' point of view, or how's it shaping out for the Texans? How's it shaping out in terms of the long run? It's very difficult at this point in time because we simply don't know. At this point in time, assuming it goes ahead to some extent at least, if you were in Bill O'Brien, how are you feeling about the teams that you've got facing up ahead of you?
Well, I think when you start the season with four games like that, when they're 44 and 20, I think you got a tough road to hoe. If you look at after the first four, then you get Jacksonville, then you go to Tennessee where you won last season, then you get the Packers at home. Packers, of course, 13-3 last year. Then you go to Jacksonville. You swept the Jaguars last year. They shouldn't be as good as then. Then you go to Cleveland. You could win Cleveland. Patriots, you beat them last year. Detroit, you beat them last time. Colts, you beat them here the last time. Chicago's never beaten the Texans. And at the end of the year, they get the Bengals and the Titans at NRG Stadium. If indeed they're still in the running, eight and six. Then again, and they're in the running. They got a good chance of beating the Bengals and the Titans in the last two games to finish 10-6. The key is to be in the running when they play those last two games. And I'm fired up about a lot of them, and especially the division games. I get fired up about that. I hate to see them play the Colts two times in 3 weeks in December, the way they did with Tennessee last year when they played them twice in the last 3 weeks. But, you know, it's certainly going to be exciting. Chiefs have already been established as a 9.5-point favorite. Texans beat them 31-24 there in regular season last year, and they had them down 24-0 in the playoff game. I'm not saying they're going to win, but it could be a very exciting game.
Absolutely, and I was about to say, I mean, from the Texans' point of view, I think a lot of people are writing them off immediately when they see the Kansas City Chiefs week one. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's going to be an incredibly tough game. Not only Super Bowl champions, obviously, but at Arrowhead, it's always tricky. But like you mentioned, Texans did beat them during the regular season last year, and they were winning at one point in the preseason game, postseason game, quite convincingly for what felt like 2 minutes. But at the end of the day, they have shown that it is more than possible. And one thing that I'm really interested to see is that it's going to be a completely different offense heading to Arrowhead as well this year, with Carlos Hyde gone, obviously DeAndre Hopkins gone, and a bunch of new faces in. It's going to be really interesting to see how they face off against the Chiefs. I think if they can get out of that first 3 weeks, obviously Chiefs, Ravens, Steelers, if they can get out of that with a relatively healthy offense, they've got a good chance moving forward. It's just a case of trying not to pick up too many injuries too early. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I think if they could come out of those games 1-2 with Minnesota here on October 4th and Jacksonville here the next week, they'd be in pretty good shape. If they somehow be 2-1, it'd be a miracle. I wouldn't expect that, but we don't know. It's so far away, and it could be a lot later than September 10th. But I'm eager to see if the defense improves, and it's going to be so tough. Mahomes, Jackson, Roethlisberger, right out of the gate for a defense that is weak in the secondary and hoping to improve up front. Problem is, and I'm writing about this on Sunday, it's harder for rookies in any season in history because they can't get on-field coaching in the off-season. And then they have camp and preseason reduced, so we might not expect anything from rookies till the second half of the year. And a team like the Texans needs all the help they can get on defense. Offense, not so much. I think, Anthony, the right guard was Zach Fulton. If everybody's healthy, he's the only position that maybe they sign a veteran and bring him in there to compete with Fulton. But everything else, they got starters and they got depth. The key is, like you said, it's the injuries.
Absolutely, and it's interesting what they're going to do with the rookies, as you mentioned, on defense in particular. Obviously, losing DJ Reader, there's a big hole up front there, and while Blacklock looks like he could well be a good player to replace him, it's going to be difficult to put him in from week one, given the short preseason that they're going to be working with. So either the rookie's going to be faced with incredible pressure compared to even compared to a regular season in those first few weeks, or the Texans are just going to be quite thin up front for the first few weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that. In the more immediate future, do you see the Texans possibly making any move within the next, say, 3 or 4 weeks in terms of free agents?
Yeah, well, I think they'll sign a guard. I think they'll sign a safety. Ross Blacklock was not drafted to replace DJ Reader. DJ Reader's a 2-0 technique, 2-gap nose tackle plays, running downs, great against the run, not a pass rusher. Blacklock was drafted to play defensively and move inside in passing situations. If they did want him as a starter in a 3-man front over Brandon Dunn or Eddie Vanderhoes, who are true traditional nose tackles, they would have him slanted because they don't want him having to hit a guy, hold him, and try to tie up two blockers. He was brought here to shoot a gap, penetrate, try to be disruptive. And so I think we'll see him early in the year in passing situations or starting at end with Brandon Dunn or Eddie Vanderhoes as the nose tackle, probably Dunn. He started 10 games on the nose 2 years ago. And the key is what they do in the passing situation. But last year they were awful in run defense. They were very consistent on defense. They were terrible overall. They were terrible against the run and terrible against the pass. So they were very consistent. You got a first-year coordinator in Anthony Weaver who's got to defense, put up schemes and make calls for Mahomes, Jackson, and Roethlisberger in the first 3 games. You talk about a tough baptismal for a first-time coordinator. It doesn't get much tougher than that.
Do you see them possibly leaning more heavily on Timmy Jernigan than up front than perhaps we'd expected?
I think they will. In passing situations, in a perfect world, you'd have Ross Blacklock, Timmy Jernigan. Now, Jernigan's been hurt the last 2 years. If you had the Tim Jernigan from early in his career, then, and he may be that. I don't know. They're counting on a lot of guys they brought in who've had injuries in recent years. But say you had Watt and Merciless outside and you had Jernigan and Blacklock inside, or you move Merciless in at linebacker with Cunningham and you had Jacob Martin coming in on the end, or you have Watt sliding inside with Blacklock and then you have Aminihu and Martin or Merciless on the outside. So they have a lot of options for pass rushers. I look for Charles Aminihu in his second season and Jacob Martin in his second season with the Texans to take big jumps next year.
Absolutely. I had the chance to speak to Charles Aminihu earlier this week, and he said that him obviously being a fifth-round pick, it sticks with him as a chip on his shoulder. I think he said 100,000 million percent it's always on his mind, and he said that he wants to prove everyone out there who caused his draft stock to fall wrong. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can see what we can get out of him this year. I think that it could be an exciting year for him. Another one, another guy I'm looking forward to seeing is Duke Ejiofor. I'm hoping that the Texans can get some more out of him this year as well. And Callum Bailly as well. I know he's not had a huge role the last couple of years. He's been injured on and off as well. But I really liked what I've seen from him in the past. You know how the Texans feel about those sorts of guys as well.
Well, Duke Ejiofor has got to prove he can stay healthy. Peter Kalambai is a good special teams player, but they got 3 guys ahead of him. Dylan Cole plays a lot when he's healthy. What's good for Kalambai is Dylan Cole gets hurt every year. But right now, their inside linebackers, Bernard McKinney, Zach Cunningham, and Cole, first one off the bench, they're set. They could use another one. Peter can play outside. He can play inside. He's a key to their special teams, a very, very valuable member of the team. And he'd love for Duke Ejiofor to get in the running and stay healthy and bounce back from that torn Achilles tendon last year and prove that he's going to be in the mix as a pass rusher too. And but I'll believe it when I see it, just because I haven't seen him on the field since his rookie year, since he blew out his Achilles in an off-season program last year. That's the good thing about not being on the field right now, is they can't get hurt.
Absolutely. Every cloud has a silver lining, I suppose, looking at it that way. And you mentioned, finally, you mentioned that safety is a position you expect them to address over the coming weeks. Are there any names in particular that you think they could well be linked with?
No, there's a bunch of stiffs out there. If you look at it, there's more than 100 veteran players that still don't have jobs. And you got them at every position. But if most of them are available at this point, there's a reason. They can't play anymore. They're injured. There's a lot of guys like Jadeveon Clowney and Cam Newton and Tony Jefferson and a bunch of them who were hurt last season or had surgery right after the season. And those guys are not going to get a lot of money. Clowney will once people can have their doctors examine him and where he is for that sports hernia surgery yet after the season. But I expect the Texans will sign somebody, have no idea who. Problem is right now, if they played, they would have Eric Murray starting at safety with Justin Reed, and their backup safety would either be Lonnie Johnson, the cornerback, or maybe Michael Thomas or A.J. Moore, but neither of those guys is a good player. Those guys are good special teams players. They don't have Tashawn Gibson Jr. and Senior and Jahlil Adai, who were second and third safeties after Justin Reed from last season. Safety, to me, is still the biggest question mark on this team.
And do you think the Texans made a mistake in opting to get rid of Tashawn Gibson recently?
No, I knew he wasn't going to be back. He's 30. He's playing his ninth year. He got hurt. I think for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because of his injuries or what, he fell out of favor with Bill O'Brien. That's why I kept saying I thought they would draft a safety in maybe the third round, or if they traded down the second. Shows what I know. They didn't draft one at all, which means they like Eric Murray. Eric Murray, part-time starter, but they gave him like $21 million a year, something like that. I thought, man, that's a lot to come in as a third safety to replace Jahlil Adai. But they're paying him starters money, so maybe they see something that nobody else does.
Absolutely, and I guess we can only hope it turns into a Carlos Hyde situation, a guy that nobody really wanted and has a 1,000-yard season. I guess we can only hope for something along those lines.
That's a good point. Carlos Hyde's a good example. He could have signed here for $5 million a year, an extension. He took a chance that he'd get more. Now nobody's going to come close to giving him $5 million a year.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning last time you were on, big mistake on his part to reject the Texans not too long ago. He's going to be living to regret that, I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know what the heck he and his agent were thinking. It's too bad because everybody liked him here, had the best season of his career. Now, I still think David Johnson, if he's healthy, he's going to have a really good year as a runner, and I know he'll have a good year as a receiver. He and Duke Johnson will be the most prolific twosome in the NFL when it comes to catching passes because both are outstanding receivers. And I think Johnson, he'll get 1,000 yards if he stays healthy, but Carlos Hyde was a nice surprise last year, and now he just continues to bounce around the NFL like a pinball.
Absolutely, and I think that is a fantastic point to leave us on there for today. John, thank you so much for joining us once again. It's been an absolute pleasure. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
Anthony, it's my pleasure. You can read me in Texas Sports Nation, TXSN.com, the Chronicles Sports website, and I'm at McLean. _on_NFL. I appreciate it. I'm glad you're doing well and stay healthy.
And thank you once again there to John McLean. That is it for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at @ARWoodNFL. And of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans Wire of USA Today. Thank you very much for listening. And of course, go Texans.